I'm glad to be here.
Thank you.
You know, we've been having the Olympics, and there's also another Olympics that goes on called the Paralympics, and it says 7 wheelchair athletes have been banned from the Paralympics after they tested positive for WD-40. We're going to be studying about some of the Arab nations today and pre-Arab nations. An Englishman started his own business in Afghanistan. He's making landmines that look like prayer mats. It's doing well. Profits are going through the roof. These are compliments of Mitch Douglas. All right. Turn your Bibles to Genesis chapter 13. We're studying the book of Genesis and have been now for a bit. If you have a map, I'm going to get to this in chapter 14, so you can keep it kind of handy. We're talking about Abraham now. We've gone through the first 11 chapters of Genesis, and these are one of the most unique documents in all the world. In fact, it is the only authentic history we have of the world before the flood. There is no other authentic history out there. This is it. Genesis 1 through 11. We are now entering into a new era. It's been about 400 years since the flood. And God appeared to a man by the name of Abram, who we know as Abraham, and who we'll call Abraham because he was renamed later. And Abram was living down in Ur of the Chaldees. That would be in Iraq, modern-day Iraq, down in the southern part, down near the head of the Persian Gulf. And God appeared to him while he was in his native land. And God made a covenant and made some promises to Abraham. And we have those in Genesis 12, 1 and 2. And so Abram went out with his father, and they stopped at Haran. They went up the Euphrates. You can look at your map and see where they went up the Euphrates. I did not put Ur on this particular one, but down in the area near Erech, which was Uruk in modern terms, they went up the Euphrates to Haran. They remained at Haran until Father Terah died. He was 205 years old when he died. I was asked the question this morning if Abraham was a triplet. The answer is no, he was one of three brothers. His older brother, Nahor, was born when Terah was 70 years old. And so he was 60 years old when Abram was born. He would have been 100, Terah would have been 130, the father. Because Abraham was 75 when he left Haran, 5 years after Terah died. Terah had been an idolater, just like everybody pretty much was down in that land near Babel, which became Babylon. We read about that in Genesis 10. And so God called him out of that to go to a land that he would show him that Abraham didn't even know. He'd never even seen. And by faith, he left his native land. He left his father's house. That's what it says in Hebrews 11. That means he exercised faith in God before he ever left. Not after he got into the land, not long years later in Genesis 15, whenever he gave his testimony, but he exercised it there in Ur of the Chaldees. Now, he finally left Haran, and he went down into the Promised Land, and we read how that he first came to Shechem, and first thing he did was build an altar. Now, in building that altar, he was acknowledging God. He was also claiming possession of the land that God was going to give him. It was future tense. God had not yet given it to him, but had promised it to him. And everywhere you see Abraham going, he's always building an altar. He's the man of the altar. He relocated from Shechem down to Bethel. It was called Luz back in his day, but later became known as Bethel, which means the house of the Lord. And that was named Bethel because Jacob had an experience with God one night, and he saw the stairs that went from earth to heaven, and he saw the angels ascending and descending upon it. And Jesus told Nathanael that stairway to heaven is me. I am the the way, the truth, and the life. And he says, hereafter you'll see the Son of Man with the angels ascending and descending, a direct reference to how that ladder represented in symbol the Lord Jesus Christ, who is the only way to heaven. Our pastor wrote a book. What was that book called?
All Roads Lead to Heaven.
Yeah, what was that again?
All Roads Lead to Heaven.
Not all roads lead to heaven. All right, not all roads, but not all roads. Okay, so that all was the reason why this name was Bethel. Now, he then went into the south country. That was the country down there that was kind of wild and woolly and sparsely settled. He had a lot of cattle. He was in the cattle and sheep business. And any time that a drought comes along and it becomes an extended drought, cattle and sheep people get pretty upset about that, don't they? They get pretty uptight about that. We know what that's like in Texas, don't we? We had an extended drought back during about 2006 to around 2012 or so, and we had a lot of cattle that were lost. We had a lot of wildfires, didn't we? That was one of the worst droughts we've had in recent years. And so being that they were in that kind of condition, his wife Sarah and his nephew Lot, who was with Abraham, probably began to say, Abraham, you're going to have to do something about this. I mean, our cows are dropping like flies. And it's getting rough. What are you going to do about this, big guy? And so Abraham decided to take his family down into Egypt because it was well watered down there at the Nile River Basin. So they ended up going to Egypt. Now, before they ever left Ur of the Chaldees, Genesis 20 tells us, verse 13, that Abraham had asked Sarah to do something for him and form a pact with him. They married, she was his half sister. He married his half sister. Back in those days, when Adam and Eve had sons and daughters, if brothers and sisters didn't marry, there wouldn't have been any kids, right? They had to start out marrying sisters. And the practice still prevailed to a degree. They were marrying still half sisters in Abraham's time. By the time of Moses, and when the law was given to Moses, then it was forbidden to marry sisters any longer. The race wasn't pure genetically, and it was not healthy to really have brothers and sisters marrying and producing offspring. So, but because she was his half-sister, he says, if you'll do this, if you'll tell a little half-lie and say that you're my sister, just tell that part about it, but don't tell the other part about you're my wife, then when we go out into the land, then there won't be the kings and other people out there who will see you because you are a beautiful lady. And they won't kill me so they can take you into their harem. If they think I'm just your brother, they'll leave me alone. So will you do that for me, Sarah? Sister Sarah. Wife Sarah. And she said, okay, I'll do that. Now, you know, there's several ways you can lie, isn't there?
Yeah.
One's just to tell an out-and-out lie, right? An out-and-out falsehood. We got a lot of news outlets that's doing that these days, don't we? I mean, just publishing out-and-out lies. But then another way you can tell a lie is just don't tell all the truth, right? Just hold back some of the truth. But you know, lies are lies in God's sight, aren't they? Doesn't matter how you do it. This is one of two blots on the life of Abraham as he goes down into Egypt. And sure enough, somebody told the Pharaoh, the king down there, that this beautiful lady had come into the land and he needed to get her for his harem. Kings had harems back then. And so that's what happened. And Sarah was taken by violence. She wasn't given a choice in the matter. And she was taken into the house of Pharaoh. And that's where we left off last week. She is now in the house of Pharaoh, and what's going to happen? I bet about that time she's wishing she hadn't pushed old Abraham so hard about going to Egypt. So here she is, and look at verse number 14. We'll start right there in chapter 13. And it came to pass that when Abram was come into Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman that she was very fair. She was about 60, 65 years old. And she was a model. The princes also of Pharaoh saw her and commended her before Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And he entreated Abraham well for her sake. He says, it's customary for us to give gifts and for me to give a dowry, and so I'll give you a good dowry for this woman. And he had sheep and oxen, and he asses and men servants and maid servants, and she asses and camels. And so he gave all of these gifts in the form of a dowry to Abraham. Now that's sin number two. Abraham doesn't come off looking real good accepting all these gifts for his wife Sarah, which he has not disclosed as his wife, but only told the half-truth about her being his sister, and he's in kind of a mess right now. And so God's going to have to step in, and God's going to have to do something about this. He's going to have to rescue Sarah, because Sarah is going to become the ancestress of Jesus Christ. And if he doesn't do something, then the plan of God will come to nothing. But God never lets that happen. And so it says that the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues. Now about 400 years from now, God's going to come down and plague another Pharaoh with great plagues, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's going to send fleas, flies, and frogs, right? A lot of other things. And I don't know what these plagues consisted of, but they weren't very pleasant. And so Pharaoh was plagued because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this that thou hast done unto me?" Somehow God revealed to Pharaoh, just like he did to Abimelech, the Philistine king, which Pharaoh didn't do this just once, but he did it twice. I worked on a case one time which involved one of these H-structure transmission lines. Now, if you're not in the electrical business, you wouldn't know the difference between a transmission line and a distribution line, would you? A distribution line, it runs up and down the streets and roads. And that's where you get your power from in front of your house. A transmission line runs across the country, and it's a high-voltage line. It's on the steel towers, and it's on these H-frame structures, you know, the two poles with a cross arc between them. So now you got it, right? You've learned something. Well, they were reconductoring one of these things down in Deep East Texas. And these guys were climbing these things, and they were hanging the hardware. Well, one of them had a hand line wrapped around his shoulder. It had been in the mud because it had rained. And so he was going to walk across the cross arm, holding on to a wire, a static wire. It wasn't an energized wire. And he was going to walk from one side to the other. And he had this rope, this hand line, it was dangling down, and it was wet, had mud on it, and he brushed it across the insulator screen below him. So when he began to walk across there, he got buzzed. Well, he backed up, and guess what he did? He did it again. I guess the first time wasn't good enough, but this time he fell 50 feet and broke both legs. So I had to investigate that thing. That's been 20 years ago. Well, anyhow, Abraham is kind of like that. First time wasn't good enough. He's going to do it again in Genesis chapter 20 when he goes to Philistine country. But we'll get to that and save that for a later Sunday. So here he is, and he's in a mess. And God, and by the way, the reason I said all that was because in the Philistine country, God came to the Abimelech, who was the Philistine king, came to him in a dream. And he said, "You've got another man's wife in your house under your roof. You're a dead man." Now, God didn't mince words, did he? And so he probably revealed himself somehow to Pharaoh that you better let this lady go or you're in trouble. And so he calls it, "What have you done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was thy wife? Why saidest thou, she is my sister, so I might have taken her to me to wife? Now therefore, behold thy wife, take her and go thy way. Keep the dowry. Forget it. Just get out of here. Get out of my land. Get out of town." And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away, and his wife, and all that he had. And so Abraham went down into Egypt with cattle that were skinny, and that were scrawny, and that were dying because they were in a drought. He came back with a bunch of fat cattle, fat sheep, fat camels, and fat servants, whatever. And it says he had female servants, and one of those female servants, her name was Hagar. And Hagar is famous because Abraham, he couldn't have any kids at a certain point in his life. Sarah couldn't have kids. And so they used Hagar for a surrogate mother, a surrogate wife. And her son became Ishmael. And Ishmael became the father of all of the Arabs, the Palestinians and the Arabian Arabs of the north. And that's why we've got so much trouble today, is because Abraham had a son by this Egyptian handmaid. And so Ishmael and Isaac, later he had Isaac, they couldn't get along, and the tent of Abraham wasn't big enough for both of them. You know, the UN would step in and say, we need to put barbed wire down the middle of the tent of Abraham, and little Ishmael's got to stay on this side, little Ike's got to stay on that side. The first thing you know is little Ishmael would throw a rock at little Ike, and it'd be a border war, right? So that's the problem we got, and we still got that problem today, and that problem is not going to be solved by the President of the United States. It's not going to be solved by the UN. It's not going to be solved until the Prince of Peace comes and straightens everything out. But anyhow, Abraham's got himself into a mess, and that mess, we're all still in that mess because of what he did. Let me tell you something. You don't live to yourself. You don't die to yourself. You don't sin to yourself. Anytime we get out of line and we make the wrong choices, it's going to affect somebody else, isn't it? Whenever we do something amiss, it affects our kids. When our kids do something amiss, it affects us. Sometimes we pay for it the rest of our lives, don't we? Well, anyhow, this is the story. Now we come to chapter 13, and Abraham's back in Canaan land. He went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. Now remember, Lot is the son of Haran, who died in the land of Ur of the Chaldees. Tradition says he was roasted in a smelter by old King Nimrod. Don't know that to be true, but he did die. We know that. And so Lot, who is now an orphan, is traveling with Abraham. He's seeking his fortunes with Abraham. He actually accepted the God of Abraham, because in 2 Peter, it tells us, chapter 2, that Lot was a just man and that he had a righteous soul. So, I mean, that's plain enough. Lot is a man of faith, just as Abraham is, but Lot is not, he does not have the faith, the same faith of Abraham. He doesn't have as much. Now, Abel was very rich in cattle and silver and gold. Now, this is the first time we read about silver and gold in the Bible being used as a currency. Now, that doesn't mean it was coined. These are not silver and gold coins. These weren't walking liberties or anything like that. But this was just blocks of silver and blocks of gold. And when you paid for something, you'd chop a little of it off and you'd weigh it out in the scales and then you'd pay, you know. But they were now using silver and gold for currency. It's a far cry from these people that are all drooped over and they got arms long enough to reach the crown, you know, probably faces long enough to drink soup out of gas fat, and these Neanderthals. This is a far cry from that, isn't it? Silver and gold, they've already started using that as currency. And he went on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, back to Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar. So Abraham, one thing you've got to give credit for is that when he sins, he just admits he sinned and he goes back to the place where he left God, and he starts walking with God again. That's the way to do it. Now we're going to sin. There's not anybody that hasn't sinned. But we got to remember that when we sin, that Jesus is faithful and just to cleanse us from our sin and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. And so he got back up and he went back to where... But unfortunately, Lot wasn't quite there. Abraham called on the name of the Lord. He publicly worshipped the Lord there at Bethel at the place of the altar. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. He went into Egypt a poor man. He came out of Egypt a rich man. Now the land was not able to bear them that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together, and there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle, and the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. It was sparsely settled, but there were some people that were still in the land at that time. And so what happened is that the land didn't have enough grass for both herds. And so one day, there was strife going on. Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren." He was walking out with Lot. He said, "Lot," he said, "life's too short. We don't need to be striving over which patch of grass, what herd of cattle is going to be grazing on." And so he said, "I tell you what." He says, "You just pick any direction that you want, and you take that direction, and we'll separate, and I'll go the opposite direction, and I'm going to give you the first choice." Abraham was a magnanimous man, wasn't he? And so Lot then began to look, and he looked down from the hilltop that he was on, the old Bald Mountain that he was on, and looked down into the waters of the waters of the Jordan and the plain of the Jordan. It was well watered in those days. It was very green down there. It was like the garden of the Lord, it says. And so this was before the Dead Sea became the Dead Sea. There was some water down there. But the Dead Sea will not be what it is until a little bit later, until after chapter 19. Because something's going to happen in chapter 19 that's going to turn the Dead Sea into the Dead Sea. But there was still water, but not as much. And there were also tar pits down there. Slime pits. There was black gold that was bubbling up through the seams of the ground. We're going to run into that in chapter 14. You know, one day old Abraham was out shooting for some food and up through the ground, come up bubbling through. Oil, that is. Black gold, Texas tea. And so he became a Canaan hillbilly. No, I'm just carried away here. And so, Lot looked down there and he saw that green grass in the floodplain of the Jordan, and it was waving like a sail. And he looked at that old Bald Mountain that they were on, and he said, "You know, old Uncle Abraham, he's getting up in age. He hadn't got long to live." He said, "Uncle Abraham, if it's all the same to you, I believe I'll just take the green grass down there, and I'll take that area, and I'll just leave you the old Bald Mountain. How's that?" Abraham said, "Son, that's fine. Lord will take care of it." And so the Bible says then that Abraham, that Lot chose, verse 11, bad choice, I'll tell you why in a moment, all the plain of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves, the one from the other. And Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent towards Sodom. Now what's wrong with that? Verse 13 says, "The men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly." They weren't just ordinary sinners. They were great sinners. So Lot chose to be down there where the green grass was, but there's wicked sinners down there, and he's pitching his tent in that direction. The next time we find Lot, he will not be pitching his tent outside of Sodom, in the direction of Sodom. He will be living in Sodom. And then when we get to chapter 19, he will be the big cheese. He'll be the mayor of Sodom. So you see, when you start going down the wrong path and you make the wrong choices, it never leads to a good end, does it? Compromise always gives us something that we don't want. So he made his choice. Now in chapter 14, we're going to see how his choice will affect Abraham. Well, after he left, the Lord said to Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, "Lift up thine eyes, now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art northward and southward and eastward and westward, for all the land which thou seest will I give it to will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee as a forever possession." Then Abraham removed his tent and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and there built an altar unto the Lord. Once again, building an altar. He said, "Go out, Abraham. Look out north. Look out east. Look out west. Look out south. Everything you see in a 360-degree circle, I'm going to give it to you, and I'm going to give it to your descendants, for you will have descendants that will be as many as the dust of the earth. Now, remember last week we said Abraham had a starry seed, and he has a sandy seed. He's the father of the faithful, the father of all who come to faith in Jesus Christ. That's his spiritual descendants. You and I are among that number. And he also has physical descendants. He would have physical descendants that would be a multitude. And that is physical Israelites, Israelis. Israelis are children of Abraham. And God says, I'm giving the land. I'm not promising it to the spiritual seed. He didn't promise you and I as Christians the land of Israel. He says, I'm promising it to your sandy seed, to your dusty seed, to your physical descendants, and I'm promising it to them forever. It is their forever possession. Now that's pretty ironclad, isn't it? And we need to recognize as a nation, which I'm glad that today we are, that the land belongs to Israel. It doesn't belong to Ishmael. It doesn't belong to the Palestinians. It belongs to Israel. And the Palestinians are ultimately, if they don't live in harmony with the Israelites by permission, they're going to have to go back where they came from. That was the other side of Jordan. The fact is, there were no Palestinians until about 1900 when the Jews started going back and started reclaiming the land, and all of a sudden, the desert rats got interested and started crossing the Jordan and coming over and saying, hey, we're going to claim this land. Now, at any rate, we come to chapter 14. Now, this man Abraham is full of surprises. When we get to chapter 14, we're going to find a military man. Here's a man that is peaceful. Here's a man that is magnanimous. Here is a man that's a father of the faithful. Here's a man of faith. And little did we realize that underneath all of that is a man of war and a great general and a great military strategist. And here's how the story goes down. It came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and also Tidal, king of Nations. Four kings. Now look at this map I've given you. Over on the right-hand side, you'll notice Elam is on the far right part of the page. Now Elam is a son of Shem. He is a descendant of Shem. Elasar is going to be, and that little dot there that's by Elasar, actually Erech is the city. Elasar is the region. I should have put that like that. That is that part of the kingdom. Sumer or Shinar is the other part of the region, including Babel. And so Nimrod's old empire has now become divided into two areas. And the sons of Shem are back in control of the land of Iraq, just like God had assigned that land to them originally. And the Ham people of Ham, they had gotten out of their territory and taken this territory away from Shem, or taken it before Shem ever came. And so now, Shem's back in control, and the king, the Semitic king, is Chedorlaomer. He's got a $5 word, $5 name for a word for a name. So he's the leader, and he's got some people that are under him, some kings that are tributary kings serving him, and one of them is the king of Shinar. His name is Amraphel. The Jews believe he was Hammurabi. I think that's wrong. Hammurabi lived before this time. And then we see the other kings. One of them's name was Tidal. This was probably the nations represent the sons of Japheth. So here's a strange intermingling of the sons of Noah, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, all living in the same area. And now Shem is back leading these all this group. And he's ruling over Japheth, and he's ruling over Ham. Now, there were some others that were tributes to, they had been serving Chedorlaomer 12 years. And they lived down at the bottom part of what is now the Dead Sea. And these were five cities, and one of them was the city of Lot, Sodom, and Gomorrah, and Admah, and Zeboiim, and Zoar. Now they served Chedorlaomer for 12 years. In the 13th year, the lucky year, they rebelled. They became the rebels. And then that triggered the 14th year campaign of Chedorlaomer as he gets his allies together. He gets Tidal, and he gets Amraphel, and he gets Arioch, and they all come together in a great flying column, and they come down into the land to take back, to put down this rebellion. Now notice in the big circle, you see this great big circle right here? I made that. I didn't have a template with anything that big. So you know what I did? I went into the pantry and I got one of my wife's tissues. I drew a circle around that. That's how I made it. And so you see how they came down into Damascus. They went down into Ashtaroth or Canaan, down into Ham, down they're going. And they're going down a very famous path, very famous road called the King's Highway on the east side of the Dead Sea. That's still used by the Jordanians even today. They're going all the way down to the bottom down there of what I'm showing the Dead Sea to look like today, to the where Zoar is and to where Sodom is. They've got Sodom right in the middle of the Dead Sea. You know why I put Sodom in the middle of the Dead Sea? Because Sodom's in the middle of the Dead Sea. It's under the Dead Sea.
Really?
All right. Now, so we're coming down first into the land of the giants. The Rephaim, the ones that lived in the city called Ham, were the Zuzim. The long name was the Zamzumans. And probably they took the word Ham and Zumans and put it together and then took H and made it a Z and became the Zamzumans instead of the Hamzumans. And then we come to the Emims, which lived down a little bit further. Now, these were giants. Look over in Deuteronomy chapter number 2. And in Deuteronomy chapter number 2, we read about these giants. In verse number 10, the Emims dwelt in this land that was described just prior, that the Emims dwelt therein in times past, a people great and many and tall, as the Anakims. Now the Anakims were the Rephaims, and specifically they were the Rephaims. There was another group that lived south of the Dead Sea, called the Anakims, near Hebron. And the reason they were called that, their father's name was Anak, which also were accounted giants as the Anakims, but the Moabites called them Emims. Now verse 20. That also was connected, that also was accounted a land of giants. Giants dwelt therein in old time, and the Ammonites called them Zamzumans, a people great and many and tall as the Anakims, but the Lord destroyed them before them, and they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead. Now, over in chapter 3, we read about a king by the name of Og. O-G, not Oz, but Og. And he was the king of Bashan. He was the Rephaim king. Now, some of these Rephaim survived this campaign of Chedorlaomer. And he was one that was still alive in Moses and Joshua's time. Now, the unique thing about Og is that we're told how big his bed was. Turn over to verse 11 of chapter 3 of Deuteronomy. For only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the giants. Behold, his bedstead was a bedstead of iron. He was tough. I mean, he was rough and he was mean. He was so tough. When he walked down the street, even the sewers backed up. And he was a remnant of the remnant of the giants. He slept on a bed of iron. You've got to be tough to sleep on a bed of iron. Of course, some people sleep on it. I mean, we used to have iron bedsteads, didn't we?
Yeah.
Out in the country. Had a mattress on. I don't know if he had a mattress or not. And it says that is it not in Rabbath of the children of Ammon? Back in Moses' time, they kept it as a souvenir. That it was 9 cubits the length thereof, and 4 cubits the breadth thereof, after the cubit of a man. Now you talk about a king-sized bed. That was it. You know how big a cubit is? It's from here to here.
12 inches.
It's about 18 inches. Now, 9 times One and a half is how much?
I don't know.
That's 13 and a half feet.
Oh my.
This guy had a bed that was 13 and a half feet long, and his feet still hung off the bed. He was a big dude. He was. He would have been a natural for the NBA. Well, these are the giants that lived in those days. 13 feet, his head would be up here through this ceiling tile. I mean, you know, he would probably his shoulders would be up through that ceiling tile. He's a biggie. Another remnant of the giants would be Goliath. We'll come to him in the book of Samuel, right? So, these are the land of the giants over on the east side of the Dead Sea. And it says in chapter number 14 that as Chedorlaomer and his company came down in the 14th year, verse 5, that the kings that were with him, they smote the Rephaims in Ashtaroth-Karnaim and the Zumims in Ham and the Emims in Sheba-Kariathaim. That means the plain of Kariathaim. And then they went on down to Mount Seir where the Horites dwell, and the Horites were cave dwellers. The word for that is troglodytes. And they came down there to where they dwelled. Esau would later take that land away from them. But he comes on down, and he comes all the way down to El Paran, which is by the wilderness. Go all the way down near the wilderness of Paran, and very bottom of this circle, you see El Paran down there, right? Now, there's something very interesting about El Paran, which means the plain of Paran, which is near the wilderness of Paran. And when we talk about wilderness, we're not talking about a jungle wilderness. We're talking about just a barren, hilly, desert type area. Well, down there, it was in October 24th, 2017. How long ago has that been? 2 months? 3 months? The Prince of Saudi Arabia announced at a federated meeting of Arabs that the billions that they've got in the oil kingdom of Saudi Arabia, that they're thinking about taking $500 billion, they're going to propose to take $500 billion and build a new city and call it NEOM, Neom. Now, Neo is a Greek word that means new, and the M stands for Mastaga, and this is a future city, and it's going to be a city that would not have ties to the Saudi Arabian capital of Riyadh. They would be independent. They'd have their own judicial system. They would have their own system of commerce. It would be an international city. And that city is proposed to be built on a tract of land 10,000 square miles. You know how many square miles the city of Dallas is?
No.
It's about 364.
Huh.
If you take the entire Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex, Fort Worth, Dallas, you know the old story about the yellow rose of Texas?
No.
Cutest on this earth, her right eye looks at Dallas, her left one at Fort Worth. She was a dandy. Her ponytail's a dandy. It comes in mighty handy when she's a switch and flies. Well, that's another version. Anyhow, you take Dallas and Fort Worth, the mid-cities, Hearst, Judas, Bedford, Irving, Grand Prairie, Arlington, Plano, Frisco, Mesquite, DeSoto, Lancaster, Keller, Southlake, Grapevine, and put all of those together and draw a big circle around all those, and you've got about the equivalent area of what this one city is going to be in Saudi Arabia. Now, that's been proposed to be built. And it'll be operational. It'll become actually an international city. You know, this almost reminds me of Revelation chapter 18 when we read about the great commercial city called Babylon that is destroyed in 1 hour. Now, maybe this isn't going to be it. Maybe it's going to give an idea to the Iraqis and they're going to rebuild Babylon like that. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, Babylon doesn't have to be rebuilt to fulfill prophecy. But nevertheless, this is El Paran down there in that area. Now, after they had swept down through in a flying column, they returned and came to En Mishpat, which is Kadesh Barnea. You see it right there. And then they smote all the country of the Amalekites, Now, there were some original Amalekites that would later become associated with a grandson of Esau, whose name was Amalek. And then there were the Amorites. These were descendants of Ham that dwelt in Hazam Tamar. And there went out the king of Sodom, and the king of Gomorrah, and the king of Adma, and the king of Zeboiim. These are the five cities of the plain. And the king of Bela, the same as Zoar. And they joined battle with them in the Vale of Siddim. Now you'll see I've written the Vale of Siddim over on the west side of the Dead Sea. You need to have a little arrow that points down to the bottom part of the Dead Sea, because it was a vale. It was not a sea at that time. It had not yet filled up with water. And this is where the tar pits are going to be. So with Chedorlaomer, Omer, the king of Edom, and with these five kings that's come out, we've got the Battle of the Nine Kings that's about to take place. And so he names the combatants, and verse 10 says, "And the Vale of Siddim was full of slime pits. And the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled and fell there, and they became little tar babies that Brother Rabbit came in and talked to." Well, you know, one of the main chemicals in crude oil is porphyrin. And did you know that porphyrin has actually been synthesized in the laboratory in as little as 12 hours? Where did all this oil come from? Well, it doesn't take long to make oil, to be honest with you. Did you know there are no ancient oil reservoirs in the world today because oil biodegrades? There's biodegraded petroleum in the Gulf of Mexico, in the North Sea, in the tar sands of Alberta, Canada. And so there really is no ancient oil. It's a myth. When they tell you we're running out of oil, we may pump an area out in the ground, but you give it a while, you get a few hundred years, it'll fill back up again. It'll make more oil. Oil is being made all the time. Is that true, Mr. Geologist? Well, at any rate, it flows through porous rock just like water does. About 50 foot a year is what groundwater flows. Oil doesn't flow that fast because it's got a bigger molecule. But at any rate, the oil is shown in biblical history to make it to the surface in just a few hundred years or a few years. It only been maybe a couple of hundred years, 200 or 300 years since the flood, and it's already bubbling up, just like Jed Clampett found. And so the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah, they fell there. And then Chedorlaomer takes prisoners, captives, and among them was Lot. Now it's going to start to affect Uncle Abraham, isn't it? Lot made a bad choice. Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom. Lot ended up living in Sodom. Now Lot's got caught up in a war that was not of his choosing or making, and now Abraham has got to do something about it. And here is where Abraham is going to turn into a mighty general. And he's going to lead a great army, a small army actually, at lightning speed as Chedorlaomer retraces his steps up the east side of the Dead Sea on the King's Highway. Abraham's going to take a parallel path on the west side. That's the dotted line. He's going across the watershed road of the central mountain range that splits Israel. And he's going to meet up with him about Damascus. And he's going to attack him in a lightning raid. He's going to use Bedouin tactics. He's going to divide his army into at least two. He's going to come in the dead of night from different sides. And Chedorlaomer's not going to know what hit him. And Lot's going to be rescued. And you know, right before old Abraham gave the signal for them to attack, you know what he did? He stood up on a hill. He said, "Sound the battle cry. See the foe is nigh. Help us, Lord on high, for by thy grace." You ever heard that song? See, stand firm, everyone. How is it? How does that go? I think I've got that right here.
Onward, forward.
Onward, forward, shout aloud, Hosanna. Christ is captain of the mighty throng. Sorry, I couldn't remember that any better, but don't you know Abraham sung that? Well, anyhow, we're going to read about that next Sunday, about that lightning raid, and we're going to discover another surprising person that you would never have dreamed of meeting. His name is Melchizedek. We're going to talk about him. So I might stop right there. Here, come on up.